In this episode, discover how to survive the Netflix economy and how to create binge-worthy buying experiences.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery.
Hey-o! All right, a big trend series of episodes are coming up for you, and this is the first one. You've heard me say it before, but chief marketing officers, their turnover is at an all-time high on LinkedIn, and there's an important lesson for all of us about what we can learn from chief marketing officers getting kicked to the curb. Sales access to prospects is crashing, and even Fortune 500s are no longer safe from competition. With over 50% of Fortune 500 companies disappearing within the past 20 years, it's time for us to take a couple steps back and reflect, because the world has changed so much and so quickly that marketing and sales leaders have simply fallen behind, operating in yesterday's playbook in today's world, which I think we all know is a recipe for disaster. We all know that the world has changed. We're witnessing it on a daily basis. But the question is how, right? What has changed and how can businesses adapt to these changes? There are actually a few mega trends that are all converging and forcing business leaders to adapt and evolve or face extinction. It's important you know about this. So to help you get caught up and to get ahead on these trends, I'm joined right now by Wirebuzz's big nerd, president of the company, Marcus Krieg. Welcome to the show.
What's up? I can't say welcome to the show.
I kind of did it like Gary Vee.
I'm so glad to be on the show.
Right on. Marcus, great to have you in studio.
It's good to be back.
Let's talk about this big trend. Let's talk about the Netflix economy and what we're seeing as digital strategists that advise, I don't know, we're probably at maybe 100 companies that we're advising now.
Well, if you count all the companies we are advising or all of the ones who paid us for it, the numbers are radically different.
Break down the big picture on the developing trend, and then let's hash it out so this audience gets the full scope of how it impacts their business and the way they deliver their compelling message.
Absolutely. So the Netflix economy is basically this concept that defines the state of the world that we now live in as businesses, right? And the reason we use Netflix is that Netflix is perhaps the best exemplar of all of these trends in action, and a business that adapted to those trends at lightning pace in order to create a juggernaut business that has they have their finger on the pulse of what every single person, every single one of their users wants to watch. And they have extended attention spans for so long. And marketers need to learn, how are platforms like YouTube and Netflix and Facebook optimizing for attention span in a world where so many sales and marketing professionals are saying, wait, people have lower attention spans, right?
Absolutely. It's almost the inverse, right? Where Netflix has figured it out. But you mentioned something really interesting. You mentioned that Netflix does this for each individual user. Mm-hmm. So there's also, as marketers, we know, personalization,
yep,
relevance, mm-hmm, comes into play here. Flesh this out a little deeper for us.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that Netflix did so well so early is that they provided a massive amount of choice, right? And if you consider the trend line in media consumption and content consumption, it used to be ABC, NBC, CBS,
alphabet
and the radio.
Alphabet soup.
Alphabet soup, exactly. And then we got cable, and cable expanded it, right? Or actually, you had the antennas, and then you get cable, and you expand it a little bit. And then we had satellite. And satellite opened up choice. And once you had access to all of those choices, cable had to respond with more choices. And then we get channels like Lifetime and Outdoor and Discovery and all of these other much more niche programs. And it fragmented everything.
And for me in my life, it happened with ESPN. Because, dude, I would have to sit up late at night and wait for the evening news. And I don't know if it happened at 10 or 11, but as a kid, I wanted to get sports. I wanted to know if I grew up in LA, if I wanted to know where my parents, University of Arizona, did in that game, I'd have to wait up for the news. And then often, I know this is going to sound weird, they wouldn't even cover it. So then you'd have to wait for the morning in the newspaper to show up. But then ESPN came and it became narrow casting and like opened the door to that niche service.
Absolutely. But you're also tapping the second trend that Netflix was able to ride into, which was the on-demand revolution, right? It started by you don't have to go to Blockbuster or Hollywood Video anymore. We'll send it to you. And it was a convenience service, a scalable convenience service where they were able to cut out infrastructure in order to compete. Very simple, but that's not what we're talking about when we talk about the Netflix economy. What we're talking about is how they grew from that point on, because that's the evolution that they rode all of these trends to massive success, and they've adapted along the way as these trends have developed. So one of them, of course, as you mentioned, is personalization. You go to Netflix today, every single person's feed and order and the categories and everything is going to be personalized to you based on what they've learned about your habits in the past. All automatically. Same thing happens on YouTube, same thing happens on Facebook, it's happening all over the place. But brands have not adapted to the need that consumers now feel because it's a consumer expectation that things will be customized and personalized to them.
And now we're expecting it.
Exactly, right? We expect our ads to be relevant to us. We expect that the salesperson who comes with the presentation has already looked into our business and has already had some sense of hypothesis and solution ready for us.
Right.
It's an expectation now. It's a cost of doing business. And yet brands are still speaking to everybody. And that is one of the reasons why Fortune 500s have been crashing so hard. Because their method of doing business, of being big, was to sell to everybody. And now that people have become accustomed to choice, and the internet has opened everything up, and now it's never been easier to have a small or a mid-sized business and to be more specific and relevant and steal market share from the big guy.
So one message to many is the way most chief marketing officers were raised.
Brochures,
right? And they brought that type of thinking of creating really smart brands or really great slogans and jingles into a world that's really about hyper-personalization, and they're now ill-equipped, and so they're getting the market turnover and the effects when those changes need to be taken place, and they're happening right before our very eyes.
Right. Our traditional marketing infrastructure that the enterprise-level businesses and the businesses that are designed like preceding enterprise-level businesses, they're all based on brand marketing principles. They might have a direct response guy. They might have a digital marketer. They might have someone who does performance advertising, but maybe not. The marketing leadership is largely from the brand sort of legacy. And that's not to say that brand is bad, but brand is no longer the exclusive role of marketing. Now it's much more important that the brand marketers learn a little bit about direct response and sales, because that's the other trend line that we're seeing here, is that people, as that is a sense of on demand, being able to enter the buying experience whenever they are ready for it, and then to be able to leave the buying experience whenever they get uncomfortable or have a question, which we try to avoid, of course, with our copy and our messaging. But they want to be able to leave. And as business leaders, we need to understand that they will leave sometimes. So how do we get them back?
How do we reel them back in or create on-ramps for them to come back into the journey?
Netflix does this incredibly well, right? Do they not? They create bingeable content experiences that are hyper-relevant to you. And they create breaks. And if you want to get all of your content consumed, say you want your entire series to be viewed, then publish it all at once.
Right.
Because some people are going to start and forget about you by next week. But if you give someone a 10-hour stretch of viewing time, sometimes they're going to use a Saturday afternoon and evening to go through the whole thing.
My in-laws right now, because they are like the sweetest salt of the earth. They don't cuss or... I was with them last week, and they are, after Wendy and I go to bed, because we're obviously older than them, and we go to bed super early, but they've been sitting up binging Breaking Bad. And these are the sweetest people. Like, my father-in-law was raised to be a priest, and their brains are being really rewired right now through this bingeable Netflix experience with Breaking Bad that I don't know if we're ever going to recoup the original in-laws that I was introduced to. And so this happens in homes all over. And if you're not retired, it's basically happening, you know, when you get home from work, or it's happening on the weekend, and people just crush the information.
Mm-hmm. And this is true when people are in a buying state. They are in a buying state for a certain window. They're mm-hmm. motivated for a certain window. They're emotionally invested for a certain amount of time before they lose it. Let people rabbit hole. That's what people want to do. And in fact, many people, that's a lot of the joy of buying, is going through the learning process. They find it enriching, and it's fun.
And by rabbit hole, you mean like Alice in Wonderland.
Like Alice in Wonderland. Go deep. Just keep chasing, right? And so, like, my wife is the perfect example, but I'm such a huge nerd. Like, I go so deep sometimes. But, like, my wife's nerding out on snowboards right now.
Right.
She's been going up constantly to go snowboarding, and right now, that's the rabbit hole she's in. She is in a buying state. If they could show, her new Burton step-in bindings are arriving today. She just texted me, was super excited, right? And so, but there's only a certain window. This is the first time in all the years that I've known her that she has been in a buying state for snowboarding gear. So they need to be riding that momentum. And businesses oftentimes force people to jump through hoops or to wait a long time because people don't like getting daily emails, or because I don't want to push them to the sale too soon. And so they make it hard to buy. Make it easy for people to learn everything they want. Oh, people don't read. Okay, well, if you're really concerned about that, make a video. But people will read a lot if they want to understand some piece of your tool or solution or whatever it is. Like, nothing drives me more crazy than I want to know more about that, but they gave me three sentences because they're concerned I don't want to read.
Right.
Ugh. I wanted to know the information,
right?
Right. And so the one thing people forget about these bingeable and on-demand experiences is that if you don't create a clear funnel that has no gaps, no logical incoherencies, right?
Bulletproof.
Right. If it's not bulletproof, it doesn't build momentum. If it's not truly something that they can go at their own pace, right? Then you're really going to run into a problem where people are falling out of your funnel and into someone else's funnel where the next thing in their head is being answered. Someone goes to another website, they go to a third-party consultant, whatever it might be, and they're going to do some research to cover the gap because they're rabbit-holing right now. And if you don't have that information and control the conversation, someone else will. And if the next step in that funnel is to opt in or to buy, you just lost a deal. So we have to create on-demand experiences that are binge-worthy, that align with the thought process inside of our customers' minds, and then create contingencies if people fall out to get them back where they were.
Okay, I absolutely love this. From the moment we started discussing the Netflix economy and how to create binge-worthy buying experiences, it's resonated with me on a very deep level. Listeners of this podcast will know that starting about a year and a half ago, we were telling you about one in particular stat, that 82% of buyers — this stat, by the way, comes from HubSpot — 82% of buyers do not want to talk with a salesperson until they're ready to make a buying decision. So when Marcus is talking about going down the rabbit hole, you know that 82% of buyers are in a different economy now. Right? They're on this bingeable experience that they prefer to be on. You always want to cater to that customer. And with CMOs getting knocked off, they're operating in a world that their customers no longer live in. So now they're obsolete. So I think the important part of this is you want to always provide an experience that your customers are craving.
Right.
Right.
And also, in order of how to do that, of course. And that's really the spirit of what we're really trying to get at. I mean, it's important to know that these things are existing, but it sucks to be like, okay, well, so what the hell do I say?
Right.
Okay, great.
Great. I know what's going on. Now what?
So, I think in terms of like how to create bingeable experiences, first of all, it starts with getting super clear on your message, right? Our homie Mike Huber over at Vertical Measures he was just telling us on his recent podcast with you, I think he said the stat was that 68% of businesses don't have a documented customer journey. And I love Mike. I think that that number is wildly off, because when you think about a customer, like how many customers have we ever met who had any kind of actual customer
journey?
Maybe
one or two.
Sometimes they'll say in a self-reported that they have something, but then it's not. It's more like they are thinking about like a persona, not an actual journey or not an actual messaging sequence. And so they're not really doing all of it, but they're able to self-report that they are doing it. And the reality is that maybe less than 3 to 5% of our the people that we meet and actually have a real documented messaging and customer journey experience that's based on each of their customer segments.
Okay, I agree 100%. And to just peel this back for the audience a little bit, our clients will be from startup to billion-dollar juggernauts. And Marcus, do the billion-dollar juggernauts have it more figured out than the startups?
Less figured out, because they have legacy leadership.
Oh.
Legacy leadership. And again, it circles back to this transition of power between sales and marketing. We look at our traditional agents, our traditional enterprise clients. They have very, very large sales forces.
Yes.
And we think about the transition in the way people sell and buy from salespeople. Those salespeople have to be really good at educating, or it doesn't work. Right? That you need to deliver an insight that's unique and novel and that makes your solution the only logical one. That's the only purpose of salespeople, right? And so if salespeople are unable to do all of that education themselves, because let's be real, most people are not going to be brilliant enough to know their client's business better than the client actually knows their own business. And so it's a high barrier to ask all of your sales team to do that. And so instead, you need to give them assets, sales enablement assets, that help them teach and create interest and engagement. And there are certain things that need to be fun, because there are moments you need to re-engage people.
Right.
And then there are other things that just need to be really straightforward and be clear and exist and have the most optimal message. Because that way, your sales team, your core sales team, your underperformers can get better faster. Maybe your top performer is going to still have the conversation and close people faster, better, but you're going to be able to lift everybody else up by creating content that will help you fuel education. The other thing is, if you use video, and we've been talking about this since it must have been episode 3 or something like that, the ability to share a video within an organization. So if you're trying to sell into an organization that's enterprise, then you have to get consensus. Because big deals, no one wants to be the person who puts their neck out for a big deal all by themselves.
Right.
Even here at Wirebuzz, right? We were basically the bosses, but we consensus build. We want everyone to agree that this solution that we're going to get for time tracking, that is this going to meet everybody's needs?
This is funny, because I was just about to bring up the project management tool that also has time tracking or budget allocation involved in it. And that was a decision. And for those of you listening, this goes on in everybody's business. The people you're selling to, even the business that you're in. When Wirebuzz was looking at a time tracking software, what we ended up getting was a consensus. We had multiple teams in the room. And I pictured in my head, like it used to be where somebody would walk out on the side of a ship on a gangplank and they'd make the decision for the business. But now we all feel like our jobs are at risk. And when we make a decision that's important, that is a big purchase that most people listening are selling, those are consensus decisions, which is the perfect use of video, because you're probably only talking to one person at that prospect's office, and then they have to go and sell you to the larger group. And often that larger group is working on multiple solutions. So the way you keep people on your track, so they're following the logical thought sequence in a bulletproof story selling way, is to create really smart tactical information that could be binge worthy, and those people can come up to speed faster. And the stats are that people are three times more likely to share video than any other type of content. So you're really controlling that experience.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing here is, okay, so the balance of power has shifted because buyers want to do more of the buying process before they encounter sales. And so that means that the information transfer process needs to mostly happen on demand before this first sales encounter, and oftentimes even before the first lead acquisition moment. And so you don't even really have their data yet, and you have to be educating these people. That is really the functional role of marketing now, to capture qualified people, to get them onto a segmented path, and then to warm them up so that they become ready to close, and that you track through some, hopefully you have some system in place to identify the people who are showing high levels of engagement going through that message, because those are the people that close. And so that way your sales team can be leaner and you're carrying less salaries, which enables you to, as the balance of power requires, shift more resources over to creating scalable content that you can use to help sell and educate to your market. And that big tectonic shift in power and responsibility without getting the actual budget and control is one of the core reasons why CMO turnover is at an all-time high. I think at one level, they are ill-prepared to survive the transition.
I mean, they've been set up to fail.
Because they've been brand marketers forever, yeah. Or they were product marketers, right? Yeah. This is a very common thing, especially in the tech space, is that they were product marketers first.
Yes.
And so they think about like the technology, and that's their frame of reference, as opposed to thinking about things like persuasion and digital marketing. And it's just a different level of a different kind of nerdery, right? And you need all of these different nerds on the team, of course. But a lot of these teams, a lot of these leaders don't have the core skill set to even teach their senior leadership what's missing, to lobby for what's missing in their organization. And so then because they can't say, I don't have the resources because this is how the market has changed, and the sales team, they're having a harder time getting in front of people because it's more our responsibility than ever before. I need budget. And then because they're not having that argument and they're not winning that argument, CMOs are getting axed because they're not performing like they used to, because people don't convert on brochure websites like they used to. They don't convert at conferences like they used to. People have more choices than ever before. And so a lot of the power that businesses, that large businesses in particular had, because large businesses could train sales forces. That was one of the ultimate superpowers of a large organization, was that they could create infrastructure and support for sales forces. That doesn't exist anymore. Small businesses that are doing better marketing are more scalable and agile now, and that is why they are crushing their Fortune 500s that can't adapt. And then you look at some of a lot of our clients, how many links will they have above the fold off their homepage because they're big? Sometimes over 150 above the fold on their homepage.
A lot of different teams competing for prime real estate above the fold, and they're helping nobody.
There's no user experience, right? And so we have had this, we've observed in marketing more direct response, more funnels, right? And that shift to one-page websites that lead to a funnel and things like that. It's because of acknowledgement of the fact that there is a clear sequence of steps that I need a very specific person to go through in order to become ready to buy. And that is a funnel. Traditional businesses, larger businesses, have a harder time creating those user experience pathways because they have so many priorities. So what have we been doing for clients? We've been creating distinct website experiences so that it's easy for that market to progress at their own pace.
An isolated page.
Absolutely.
Without the never-ending links to go off on your own rabbit trail that doesn't bring somebody down the path to conversion.
Right. It's a funnel, and it's a funnel people can easily get back to. And it's a funnel where if you're setting it up with proper technology, you can track how far they've engaged, and your sales team can re-engage. But if you don't have a documented message, if you don't have a documented customer journey, like Mike Huber was talking about on the recent episode, like I said, I agree with all of his conclusions. I just think that the self-reported data on people having customer journeys is probably overstated, and businesses need to get a lot more detail oriented about specifically what people are going through and in what order and what messages need to be delivered through that journey to maintain attention. So that's the big, I guess, Netflix economy concept and really takeaway. But I think we really want to, before we close this one out, is discuss how do we create bingeable buying experiences. And I know you're going to love the first thing here is you're going to use video, right? You're going to use, and not just video, you're going to use passive content consumption, right? Podcasts. Why do people love podcasts? Because podcasts aren't work.
And I can take it on the go.
Yeah.
Like my learning experience can happen from the moment I leave my desk to my car, to the gym, to the market when I pick up dinner for my wife, up, you know, as I get to the house and all of that good stuff. And I've now taken time that was wasted where I would have been listening to music and I've turned it into a teachable learning opportunity for growth.
Yeah. So for example, yesterday, I'm going to guess, and I might be wrong, so I'm putting my neck out on a limb here. I'm guessing that when you sent me that text message yesterday book, you were at the gym doing something and you're like,
no,
ding!
I wasn't doing something. I was getting swole.
Okay. I got
it. I just want to clarify.
So you were doing your calves.
Huge. Yeah. Right. But yeah, it's funny because I'm listening to Marcus. By the way, I love learning the same thing that you're learning at the same time because it's, you know, it's like we're in Oprah's book club.
And he's going to hear me like, well, I'm that guy who walks around the office and teaches people stuff just because I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. I got to share this with somebody.
Right. And so I'm like, I'm listening to that too. But Marcus made a comment and I was like maybe 24 hours behind the comment. And then I text him to tell him, oh yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. And you were spot on, you know, because when I go to the gym, I'm going to be making sure that I'm learning at the same time. So it's a growth experience for me.
Right.
That's why podcasts are valuable.
And that's why, and exactly. And video is another passive learning medium. And I will, 2 years ago, we did a podcast episode on video trends. So, you know, this is year three now that we've been doing this. And I will fess up and just say that 2 years ago, I said that the Cisco prediction about video consumption was wrong. They said that 82% of all online activity was going to be video viewing by 2022. And I said, there's no way that's going to happen.
Okay, dude, but check this out. I think our issue was we were concerned if they were comparing the data file transfer sizes or if it was time, and it just seemed a bit convoluted. Mm-hmm. So even though we've been trailblazing in the video space before video marketing even had a term, it was a very lofty claim.
And we've already hit it.
We've
2 years
we're not,
early.
We're not stopping.
And it hasn't been slowing down. And there was an implicit assumption in all of these predictions that it would slow down. And it hasn't. Why hasn't it? It hasn't because platforms like YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, they're all adding longer form videos. They're all enabling you to communicate for longer attention spans to people who are highly engaged. And they're optimizing the algorithms to help people discover the thing that they are most likely to watch and engage with next, which is one, magical for brands who adopt a customer-centric marketing approach, because it means that the algorithms are going to hustle you to that person, which is awesome and magical, especially on YouTube and Facebook.
So I agree with all of that. I want to add on to it.
Boom.
Because I don't think that the growth of video is just because of those platforms. I think those platforms taught our end customers how they prefer to ingest information.
Well, and each of them all basically doubled the amount of time people spend per session over the last couple years.
And that's a lesson that businesses need to then pick up as a blueprint and not think that it has to happen on YouTube or Facebook or Instagram or any of those, but pick it up and go, whoa, this is what people prefer. And this is the type of content and the way they like to go through information, and then use that and adopt it and build your business around it, because you're going to get the same experience. People will spend twice as long going down that rabbit hole. They're significantly more likely to buy at the end. And before you know it, you've created your own Netflix economy where people are going through your own binge-worthy business videos.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's being relevant. It's having a clear message that aligns with their goals so that it's binge worthy, right? Being aligned with the thoughts that are going through their head so that you're answering the question as it arises. The entering the conversation going on in your customer's mind, as John Carlton taught us.
Yeah.
Right? That copy principle, that direct response principle of speaking to the moment that people are in and acknowledging their present moment context. And what is the next thing you should say based on that context? Right? We were just talking, one of our clients is a restaurant, a local restaurant.
Will you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Just mouth the name. Don't say it out loud. Okay. Yeah. But don't do that.
Yeah. That's lip smacking. It was too clear.
No, it is. It was totally clear.
It just looked weird.
It was just a little creepy.
Yeah, because the syllables, I can see why that would look creepy.
Okay. But I'm with you. Okay, I know who they are.
All right, so we have a client who's working with us on a wedding catering video, okay? And so I was having a conversation with our strategy team and our writers on this video about what are we saying? How do we start this video? Like, what's the moment that the mother of the bride or that the bride is in when they're watching this video? Because they're watching this business's wedding catering video. Yeah. So if they clicked play on this video and they actually knew what they were watching, so if they actually engaged in a search, if they clicked around and found it, and it wasn't just served to them in a feed, which is a weird different context than what we're talking about here, because that would be a product video and a social feed. So in any context that someone's watching this video, they are already considering this exact restaurant to be their wedding catering company.
Right.
They already like this restaurant. They are now evaluating them as an option, which means what are they doing? They are way down in the funnel. They're past competing solutions. Maybe they're comparing a little bit, but now they're looking at your offer and they're saying, is it going to be healthy? Is there going to be a vegan option? Are people going to complain? Is it going to be hot and ready and on time?
Right.
Is the service going to be professional? What's included? Right. Is it a buffet or is it plated?
Am I going to be embarrassed?
Are people going to be raving about it? Or are people going to be complaining to me? Right? Is the bride going to be upset at me if I'm the mom? Right? That's the moment that these people are in. And so the burden on that video is much lighter because you're not convincing people to eat us. Of course, you want to show beautiful video pictures and stuff like that to make people salivate because food can do that.
This food's awesome.
Food tells a story all by itself. But beyond that, you want to mostly answer their objections, their fears, and eliminate all of that resistance to the sale. They're at the very bottom of the funnel at the moment they're watching this video. And so part of understanding this momentum method of creating binge-worthy content experiences is always saying, what are they thinking right now? And what do I need to tell them to get them to the next step? And to not say, oh, I need to convince them that it's about us and that our food is great. And no, you don't need to start there. That's way upstream. These people are watching a video about your service right now. Acknowledge the context.
Yeah.
So when we tell a client, oh, we're making an overview video for your homepage. Well, we know we have to start way at the beginning of the story, not with their product. Mm-hmm. And when they want to start with their product, we have to tell them, this will crush the performance of your website, right? We have to tell them that because that's all the way at the bottom of the funnel. And so we have to make the story connect. And that connection part is about aligning with the customers and the thought sequence that's going through their head. That's the art of copy. And that is one of the things that these brand marketers had not learned in the past, but are beginning to learn now.
And we've been teaching our audience to be hyper-relevant. And what Marcus just broke down is how to make a video hyper-relevant to that specific customer who's going to go through a very unique journey. And not using videos that are one size fits all across your entire platform.
Absolutely.
Right? I got to tell this little story. I know it's totally inappropriate, but while we're talking about this client, they catered a Wirebuzz. We had like a day where we shut the office down and we all went out and
had a party.
We had a party. And thank you. I was like, I don't know if I should tell this story. So I'll tell it anyway. Yeah. you can cut me off at any time. Okay. Cause you're really in charge. So they brought the company brought the food, and I think on our end we just didn't order as much protein as we should have, and then the things that came were salad, pasta, and very, very little protein. In fact, maybe it was enough protein for like 5 guys.
It was also like side protein, like protein that wasn't in the actual food. Yes. It was like B because they were being like vegetarian friendly.
Yes.
And so it was on the side. And so then you had to know it was there and then decide that that plain meat was going to go in your sauce and eat up some of your sauce. And that was a decision that I wasn't willing to make.
Which is funny because I was busy doing something else at the time. Oh, I know what I was doing. It's part of my job when we have one of these days to make sure that I serve some people some shots. So I was pouring shots. This is totally inappropriate for the podcast, but why the hell not? So so I was pouring shots. By the time I got into the—
Nobody was complaining.
Nobody was complaining. By the time I got into the line for the food, the protein was all gone. I'm gluten-free, so the pasta wasn't an option. So I just had lettuce. And that is not a good— a good bed for applying shots on top of. Fortunately, the party bus took us for the day, went out to the lake, had a great time at the lake. And I don't really know how this happened, but we went on a tour of the lake and somehow I ended up purchasing 5 DVDs of the lake tour, which I don't even have a DVD player, but I made sure to pass it out to people on the team.
In exchange for a shout out, if I recall, over the mic.
Oh yeah, they gave us a shout out. Anyway, great day. And it wasn't the— it wasn't our client's problem that we didn't have protein. It was our problem. And that'll be taken care of for our next Wirebuzz party day.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, we can kind of wrap this one up, but I think that the big takeaway here is the three trends are to acknowledge that people expect hyper-relevant, personalized experiences, whether you're in a sales capacity or a marketing capacity, and that if you align with that story, you can create on-demand and bingeable experiences that hold their attention for longer. And lastly, that one of the easiest ways to hold their attention longer is to make them not have to think about it, which means passive content consumption methods. We have watched platforms like Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, et cetera, all optimize around video because of its ability to double and triple and quadruple the amount of time people spend on these platforms. And all of those factors combined should all lead you to a conclusion that it's time to get really clear on your message and get very, very strategic about which parts of that message are being communicated by each of your teams, and then aligning content through that sequence. Maybe some of this content is in email, and that's fine. Maybe some of the content, maybe all of it needs to be on your website. There are lots of ways to construct a funnel based on your situation and circumstances, but you need to go through that documentation process. Because even if it is just 68% of people, that's 68% of businesses that are going to have a very hard time surviving the next 10 years.
Right. Really good point. If you want to get access to the interview we did with Mike Huber, it's wirebuzz.com/193. Marcus referenced it a couple of times in this episode, wirebuzz.com/193 with Mike Huber from Vertical Measures. And all right, so there you have it, the three mega trends that are making life difficult for sales and marketing leaders, for kicking CMOs to the curb. But there's good news also. You know, over the next 6 episodes, we're going to be exploring some of the specific micro trends that you should be adapting for right now. For example, you're going to discover why and how YouTube engagement actually kills ROI. Now, I know that sounds a little bit hard to believe, but trust us on this. You're going to discover that, and it's going to be interesting for you. It's going to change the way you think about your YouTube campaigns and how to respond to rising ad costs. You'll even discover our very favorite video growth hack for 2019, and here's a hint. It goes at the top of your homepage, but it's not what you think. It's not a homepage explainer video, and that's all we have to say right now. It'll come up in a later episode. He's the big nerd, Marcus Krieg. I'm Todd Hartley. We are the we've been leading this Wirebuzz team for a long time, and sit back, enjoy, make sure you start binging these next episodes as they become available, because we're excited. We've been working on this for a long time. Oh, and episode 200 is coming up, a major milestone for us and for you. If you recall, in episode 50, in episode 100, in episode 150, we had different unique people in my life that came in and told a deeper story that could give you some context of who I am and how I got to this point and what I learned along the way. But in episode 200, we want to feature other unique people in our lives, and that episode is devoted to you. So if this podcast has been valuable, if you've learned through the history of this podcast how to make your business more compelling, how to close deals at faster rates, how to use the power of video to achieve business goals, reach out to us right now. We are building episode 200, and we look forward to sharing your story with the listeners of this podcast. So on behalf of Marcus and I, we wish you continued prosperity, and the next time you find yourself in a business conversation where you need to amplify results, you are now prepared to be a video marketing master. Peace. Whoa, whoa. You're not going to drop a piece?
Oh, I thought you had like dropped me at the end there. I was just like, I'm just letting you roll now. Right, I thought you were wrapping it up. I was like, cool.
But we're not leaving.
Peace.
There you go.